talking today with Alan Tracy with U.S. Wheat Associates. Alan, as we get into 2013, I know that it's been an interesting year as far as trying to grow wheat out in the countryside, and as far as you're concerned, trying to market that product. Give us a couple of highlights of things that you're especially pleased about when it comes to the international marketplace for our wheat customers.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a number of good successes going on. We see markets growing. I think in particular Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria, those are places scattered around the globe that we have very good prospects. Those economies are growing rapidly, and we've been working with them for a long time, and so they like the kinds of things that you can make with good high-quality wheat. Nigeria, for instance, buys mostly hard red winter, and they buy 90% of their needs from the United States. And that's from a country that in as recently as 1990 didn't buy any wheat. They're now buying 3 or 4 million tons. So there are things to be happy about there. We're certainly happy, even though we don't have a real farm bill, we at least got our market promotion programs re-upped. Reauthorized. You know, they died with the old farm bill and had to be reauthorized, so that took a lot of our immediate worries away, but we still don't know exactly how much funding we have. So all the farm bill issues that plague a farmer have also plagued your marketing arm in U.S. Wheat Associates.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, the MAP and the FMD monies. You know, one-year extension, as you made reference to, the uncertainty of not knowing what they're going to do after September 30th. How does that figure into what you have to do as a manager of all your offices around the world?
I'm pretty confident that we're going to get that the program will continue. It certainly has strong support. You know, it's been challenged frequently and usually on the floor of the House of Representatives when the Farm Bill comes there each time, and then sometimes in the years in between. And with the help of NOG, it's been beaten back by pretty good margins. So I think there's strong support for the program, but there is an awful lot of uncertainty about how much money we're going to get. When we got our allocation here just about 2 weeks ago, we had they kept 10% back because of the sequester. So, meanwhile, the foreign market development year is already a third over, and we didn't have the money yet. So, it just creates a difficult planning horizon. You know, we have 15 offices outside of the United States, 61 people working for the wheat farmer all the way around the world, and we fortunately were. You know, we're able to bridge that, but we did have to curb some of our activities. Our people are okay, and we still do the basic trade servicing, and we did the major things that we have to do, continue with the crop quality work and so on. But a lot of kind of discretionary programs were canceled. Some teams were canceled. We love to get the teams into places like Oklahoma where your good farmers host them and show them where their wheat comes from. It's a great connection that helps our marketing efforts tremendously.
Let's talk about this whole connectivity. Obviously, the people that you've got in place at these offices around the country, around the world, are a part and parcel of countries like Nigeria getting interested in U.S. wheat. But, you know, why is it that we just have just countries here, there, and kind of, you know, various spots around the globe, as you've mentioned? How do we get to the point where they pop up and have interest in buying substantial quantities of our wheat?
Well, you know, it's a long path. U.S. Wheat's been at work at it for, 55 years now, I think? 53 or 4, anyway. So it's a long process. But the connection from the farmer. You know, U.S. Wheat was started by, and its predecessor organization, started by farmers. And it's that direct connection to the end-use customer that really makes a difference and connects. Mm-hmm. We, of course, have the advantage of having in the U.S. all the different types of wheat that they could want, except we'd sure like some more white wheat, by the way, hard white wheat. But because there's a lot of demand out there for that, if we could ever get enough of it together to have a whole separate export class. But we have the full grocery store, if you will. But we're not always the cheapest. And so in some parts of the world, the Middle East, when other people have wheat, when Russia and Ukraine have wheat, we've really lost out big time. Right now, of course, most of that's gone, and people are coming to the U.S., and we expect our exports to continue at a pretty high pace here for a while. But it all makes a difference, you know, and we push hard. Study that we had showed that for every dollar that is spent on market development activities, returns $23 net to the farmer. That's, you know, it's not gross, it's net. So, you know, even though half of our wheat is exported and half is consumed here domestically, it's the ups and downs on the export side that make the difference on the price for the whole thing. And so we, you know, these countries do develop their demand and with their own investment and so on. But we help them along with technical training. We help them learn how to buy. We help them with risk management. All kinds of things that tie them to the U.S. But the main thing is that in the end, once they get used to it, they really like having our wheat.
Right. Last question, Alan. And obviously, in the United States, we've got a fair amount of controversy brewing over this wheat belly situation and Dr. Davis and his book and the gluten-free concept that a lot of folks have decided, even though they don't have the sensitivity to celiac disease, that they want to embrace. Has any of that been exported and causing some problems in your efforts overseas?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, that there's a lot of work that's being done in the U.S. on those issues. The Wheat Foods Council, the Grain Foods Foundation, NOG does some work domestically. There has been some leakage of this stuff overseas, but it varies tremendously. For instance, it's an issue in the Philippines, but it's not an issue in Taiwan. I don't know quite why that is. It's an issue in Mexico, where obesity is a problem, and they're subject to the diets. As I think your growers know, it's hurt wheat consumption here in the United States, and it's probably slowed demand growth a little bit in Mexico and probably not really much anywhere else yet. The wheat belly in particular, I think, is just a passing fad. It's getting better and better known as just a fad diet. It's not really any different than Atkins. The gluten-free, though, as a marketing ploy to all sorts of people, foodies that want to have, you know, that are willing to pay a little extra for organic without really knowing what difference it is or whatever, you know, they're seeking out gluten-free, even as you say, even though they're not only not celiac, not glucose and gluten intolerant. So it's hurting our the efforts here, but not too much overseas yet.